hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of In With The Old. We are a podcast devoted to dispelling myths, building appreciation for God's Word, and helping you rediscover the Old Testament for the life of faith. My name is Dr. Tim Howe, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Brian Koning, as we finish today our series on the book of Ruth. In just a few moments, we're going to be talking about Ruth and its canonical context in the Old Testament. We're going to consider Ruth then as it fits within the New Testament in God's overall plan, and we're going to offer some final thoughts to our listeners. Before we do, Dr. Brian, welcome back to the podcast, and how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing well, and I'm kind of like anyone that has gone through some sort of journey. There's a sense of fulfillment as you reach the finish line, and a little sadness that, hey, we've now reached the end of this beautiful time together. Tim, it's been just a pleasure dialoguing with you, studying the book of Ruth. There's been a lot of really interesting details that have jumped out at me. We'll get into that a little bit today. Listeners, we hope that this series has been helpful to you, whether you're listening to this kind of live as we're putting these out or sometime later. The Bible never ceases to disappoint. Every time you come back to a text, no matter how familiar you might think you are with it, right? There's always that new thing you take away. So I'm excited to finish out this series. I'm eager as well for kind of our next series. Let's not get ahead of it. We'll finish off with talking about Ruth in its canonical context today.
Yeah, well, let's do it. And so for our listeners, we've gone through the book of Ruth verse by verse, and you can check out those other videos on our channel at In With The Old. And we're trying to provide a verse by verse commentary, but these are our reflections as we consider Ruth and its place in the Old Testament and then its place within the New. So the book of Ruth comes immediately after the book of Judges in our Hebrew, in our English canon, but in the Hebrew canon, it's in the writings. Nevertheless, the book of Ruth is associated with this time when the judges judged. And so, Brian, I'll just offer an observation as we get started. As we think about the book of Ruth, it really kind of functions as a balancing book, in my opinion, to the book of Judges. Listeners, you may remember, we talked about the time of the judges being a time when it says every man did what was right in his own eyes. There was no king in Israel, therefore there was anarchy, there was lawlessness. And yet what we see in the book of Ruth is that Ruth, surprised to us all, even as a Moabite, turns out to be faithful as a follower of God. So, Brian, that's something that leaps out to me, that Ruth provides us a balance with the book of Judges. Do you have anything you want to say about that? And what other things do you see as we consider Ruth within the context of the Old Testament?
Yeah, I think you're quite right to point out that Ruth is this kind of helpful balance and a helpful awareness that even in the darkest of times, God's people can remain faithful. You don't have to just go along with the flow. You don't have to just act as your neighbor acts, right? A true faithful man or woman of God remains faithful even in these dark times. The judges themselves stand up as kind of heroes in that book, obviously very countercultural. Well, here's someone that does not have the power, the prestige, the status of a judge, and yet Ruth shows this beautiful example of faithfulness coming from a highly unexpected place. Mm-hmm. And I'll use that as a segue over to one of the things that jumps out to the book for me is it is a argument against very, shall we say, nationalistic or even racist, if that term's appropriate, views of the nations that Israel struggled with in some of its history, right? The Moabites coming out of the Pentateuch are a despised people group, and there's some good reason in the Pentateuch for that. But this book shows up as a, you can't simply just assume that because someone has come from this place that they're going to act in a certain way. Ruth, in a time when everyone does what is right in their own eyes, does not do that, but instead shows a level of faithfulness almost unmatched by any Israelite in the story, aside from possibly, right, Naomi and Boaz. And it comes in, especially, I've said a couple times, listeners, I do think this book is written during the time of Ezra, Nehemiah. And one of the big challenges in that time is, how do we come back into our land? And there are other people groups here. What is our relationship to them? And this book has a very helpful reminder of, look, a person of God is someone that follows after them. that matters more than simply where you were born. Let's be aware of that as we live amongst the nations. And it's a very helpful, it's a very beautiful kind of view of what it means to be the people of God. And it's not limited just simply to one nationality. It is expansive. And listeners, that may surprise you, but I think it's quite important to recognize the Old Testament, even as it is talking about the singular people of God being the nation of Israel, continually has these glimpses and ideas that show that God is pulling in all nations to himself. So Tim, that's kind of where my follow-up would be. What do you think of that idea? And then anything else that jumps out of this book to you?
Yeah, I think the ethnic element is very important. We've talked many times, Ruth the Moabitess, Ruth the Moabitess, Ruth the Moabitess. The narrator does not hide that. The narrator highlights it. And when we think about this, there's something of an irony, because not only is God's heart to bring in the nations, but also for the people of Israel, it's a reminder that just because you are a physical descendant of Abraham does not mean you are a faithful follower of God. And so the book of Ruth in so many ways is helpful, because it shows God's desire for foreign nations to come in. And it also shows that God is not going to hold Israelites guiltless. And so we see God's heartbeat. We see his plan of salvation. We see that the people of God is not a static entity, but rather God is truly drawing people to himself. And he's reminding us of his goodness and how that is his plan all along. So, Brian, the only other thing I'll say is as we think about this, I think there's a lot of applicability for the idea of living righteously during a dark period of time. Following Christ is always going to be swimming upstream. And we need to remember that as those who read the Old Testament as Christians, to expect that somehow following Christ is going to be the mainstream. The mainstream sort of choice that people make is just false. If we're doing Christianity right, the Bible says we will experience suffering. Why? Because we're not above our master. We're not above our teacher. And so I love the book of Ruth, because here is a woman who has all kinds of social disadvantages. She's an immigrant. She's a foreigner. She comes from a bad family. This is a time when she's vulnerable. It's a time when she could have easily been overlooked, taken advantage of, forgotten. And yet, because of God's providence, because of his love and his care, he honors her faithfulness, and he ultimately rewards her. So yeah, tons of lessons that we can glean from this. And then also, Brian, we teased it this last episode, but can you walk us through the writing of the book of Ruth, the genealogy at the end, where we're taken to the line of David, and then through the line of David as he becomes king? Can you help us maybe understand how Ruth is situated, again, within the canon of the Old Testament, pushing us forward to the coming of King David?
Right. So in the Hebrew ordering of the Old Testament, the book of Ruth is not where it is in your current Christian Bible. Its location there follows the Septuagint, the Greek copy of the Old Testament. But its reason for being placed here is that it does serve this beautiful kind of both bridge gap and defense of the Davidic monarchy. So you have at the end of the book of Ruth the reveal, if you've never read the book before, right, that Booth and Boaz, fantastic, Ruth and Boaz, rather, are not just this kind of random love story that they'll just ride off into the sunset and we'll never hear from again. In fact, these are the forebearers of none other than King David. And that's significant for at least two reasons. First, the book of Judges ends with a, shall we say, slight towards King Saul's tribe. They are not necessarily good people. Coming right on the heels of that, then, you have this beautiful story of unexpected faithfulness and righteousness. And what do you know? It's King David's lineage. That then moves us into the time of the monarchy, predisposed to think ill of King Saul and well of King David. That kind of sets up a propaganda sense, and I don't mean that negatively, but just kind of it's pro David, and that helps us kind of go, yes, we're really excited when he comes on the scene. So that's one reason that I think is important. The second reason this helps legitimate the Davidic kingdom and the Davidic monarchy is put yourself in the shoes of a person during King David's time, which, Tim, you and I have said on this podcast before, something we need to do and something we don't often do. We often think of these as Sunday school characters that just kind of float on the clouds. If you're an Israelite when David ascends to the throne, you probably have a couple questions, and people that are unhappy with David could have a few things they could pick fights with him. One of which is he's not 100% Israelite in terms of like a purity of a line. He has foreigner blood in him, and not just any foreigner. He has Moabite blood in him. Do you really want this person to be king? Ruth, if that's a challenge to his monarchy, Ruth takes that challenge head on and says, I'm not afraid of my lineage. I'm not ashamed of where I come from, because look, I might have a Moabite ancestor. She was more faithful than all of your ancestors, being pure Israelites. It is nothing to be ashamed of. And so I think it challenges that head on. So in those two senses, I think this really firmly establishes the Davidic monarchy, the Davidic line. And of course, that's going to be then extremely important for understanding the outworking of God's redemptive plan through the rest of the Old Testament.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And Brian, I think when we consider the kind of political nuances of early Israel, we need to remember this was not, we think of David as the unquestioned, unchallenged king. Well, that is absolutely not true. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think that this speaks to the historicity of the book and the legitimacy of the book, because this is exactly the kind of thing you wouldn't want your political enemies to know. This is the kind of thing that, hey, if my ancestor is Jesse James, I'm probably not going to put that on my flyer for sheriff. You know, this is the kind of thing that he would have wanted to keep hush hush, because the Moabites were still considered the enemies of God. Yep. And yet he highlights it. He doesn't hide it at all. It's similar, or at least I have a parallel in my own mind of thinking about the women finding Jesus's body missing at the tomb. This is not the kind of thing that you would make up. This is not the kind of history that you would fabricate. And so, and I also think about this, Brian, it's interesting. And this comes to my mind, even in our own nation's history. You know, not all of our listeners are Americans, but for those who are, there's a famous case in our own country called Plessy versus Ferguson. And in Plessy versus Ferguson, you had a man who was 7/8 white and 1/8 black. And because of that, he tried to sit in a train car that was reserved for white people. This is, I believe, 1896. You can Google that and double check me. But basically, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that no, he wasn't able to sit in the white only car, that he had to sit in the car reserved for black people. And that's a rather famous case in the United States Supreme Court. But think of this. Plessy versus Ferguson, that man had the same amount of African lineage as David had Moabite lineage. David was 1/8 Moabite. Now, that in one sense, that's okay, interesting factoid, but think of this. We tend to, in a sense, not appreciate the ethnic dynamic of this, but it was very plain and it was very open. And David is essentially saying, if you've heard the rumors, yeah, they're true. I'm an 1/8 Moabite. But guess what? My great-grandmother Ruth, she was someone who was affirmed by God, affirmed by my people. She was a faithful follower of Yahweh. And therefore, I'm not ashamed of this heritage. I'm not ashamed of my lineage. And yeah. So I just sometimes think about, even as we think about our own time, we can relate these things. And they really do have something to say to us, even in terms of ethnicity and God's plan to include foreigners into the people of God.
I think it highlights our prejudice that we can slip into, right? That we want God to only work through the people we approve of or the people that fit into our categories. And this story flips that on its head and says, no, look, God works through people, whether or not you think he should be working through them or whether or not they comport with your prejudicial view of the world. So that was a great example, Tim. Thank you for bringing that in.
Yeah. So Brian, let's talk about New Testament. And this is where we can walk with fear and trepidation, right?
Well, what is the New Testament except the epilogue to the Old Testament? So,
yes.
Take that, New
yes,
Testament scholar.
Well said. And
that's all right. Go for it.
Matthew chapter 1, Ruth, don't call it a comeback, right? Jesus is mentioned in Ruth chapter 1, of course, the genealogy of Jesus, beginning with Abraham, highlighting his Jewishness, his Jewish roots. But then we follow the line of Abraham all the way down to Jesus, and included in that genealogy are several women, but one of whom is Ruth. She not only makes the list in the Old Testament, but very first thing in our New Testament canonical order, Jesus is the product of Boaz through Ruth, all the way down to his birth there in Bethlehem. Same place, same story, and it's such a powerful statement. So, Brian, maybe you can just speak to that. Why is Ruth included in the genealogy, and what does that tell us?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We're recording this today. I was just reading this morning, Christ in the Old Testament by Christopher Wright, and he points out that the New Testament begins with this genealogy in Matthew and laments that we often skip it, especially at Christmas time. We're like, let's just get to the good stuff, right? After the genealogy. And he said, no, don't skip over it, because this genealogy says some very important things about the story we're going to read, that it's rooted in this long-running redemptive plan, that it is running through the covenants. And it is running specifically through a not singularly pure line of Israel, but it's a line that includes, in Matthew's genealogy, three women are named, two of whom are not Israelite, right? You have both Rahab, and then you have Ruth here. And so she gets not just in the line of Jesus, she gets a special mention in the genealogy that she is called out, right? This is a faithful woman in the line of Jesus. And rhetorically, and especially theologically, I think this is significant, Tim, as you were alluding to, that a major theme of the New Testament, of Jesus's ministry, is that the dividing wall gets broken down between Jew and Gentile in the people of God. And Matthew highlights Ruth especially. He doesn't list all the moms in the list. Why? Because he's trying to point out that, look, this is not something that should shock us, as God has never done this before. No, God has always been the God, not bound to just one place, one land, one people, but he's the God that is expansively reaching out to his creation through Abraham, where the covenant starts, in you all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. So I think Ruth is right there at the start of our New Testament, because she stands as this, shall we say, signpost, foreshadowing where the story is going to go. So I think it's incredibly important and significant that she is one of those three women mentioned there, Tim. What else do you see in the New Testament that is important here that we focus in on?
Yeah, well said, Brian. And just even thinking about the book of Matthew for a moment, the book of Matthew begins with a genealogy that includes foreigners. It moves immediately into the story of Jesus, where the Magi are the people who come to offer him gifts, whereas the supposed Jewish king Herod misses him and doesn't understand. Some people speak of Matthew as the most Jewish book in the New Testament, which perhaps it is, but as you look through it, you see Jesus, even after the Sermon on the Mount, you have a foreigner who has faith that, according to Jesus, is greater than any of the faith that he's seen among all the people of Israel. By the time you get to the end of the book of Matthew, you have this incredible bookend where you have foreigners at the beginning, Ruth, Rahab. You then have the command at the end, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. So the book of Matthew really tells us that God's purpose is for all nations to know. Ruth and Rahab were, in a sense, the first fruits, the unexpected first fruits that formed Jesus's identity and helped us understand his mission. But at the very beginning, and from the very beginning, we see God's purposes to bring the Gentiles in. We see that in Ephesians 2, as Brian mentioned. We see that in the book of Galatians, right? The coming into the Gentiles. We see it in the argument to the Romans, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified freely by his grace. And to me, Brian, this is such a teaching point, that when we think of the New Testament, it's not just that the Old Testament is somehow a nice backdrop. We are not going to understand the New Testament unless we understand the Old Testament. We can't understand the story of the new unless we understand the purpose of the old. And so for our listeners, this is part of the reason why Brian and I are so passionate about this, because we do believe that the story rushes forward to Christ. We do believe that he is the epicenter of history, but we are going to misunderstand what he came to do unless we have the best possible grasp we can of the Old Testament and the purposes of God and the way that Christ fulfills them. And so Ruth is an amazing picture of that. Gentile inclusion is such an important part of God's purposes in the New Testament. And Ruth is evidence that this is not new. This is not God's plan B. This isn't God changing his mind. This is exactly what God was about the entire time. So what a great picture, precursor, first fruit that Ruth is. And she's a reminder that God is no respecter of persons in the sense of looking at a person's ethnicity and excluding them. No, God's door of salvation is open to all. And what a beautiful picture at the very beginning. Yeah.
So as we are wrapping up the series, Tim, I'd love to leave the listeners with kind of an application point, right? Something that we go, hey, this should change us. Because I think that's something we were both very committed to, that our study of the Bible must change us. Yes. And if it doesn't, that's not helping us. In fact, that's maybe hurting us. Mm-hmm. My application points, I've come out of Ruth as I've really thought about it, as we've gone through it verse by verse. I am really struck by the fact that we don't know how God is going to use us. We just went through kind of the outworking of Ruth's story in the New Testament and all these amazing things. Mm-hmm. Roll it back, though. Ruth has no idea that when she goes and gleans in that one field that one time, when she says to her mother-in-law, I'm going to go with you, I'm not going home, she has no idea what the future holds for her. She has no idea that she's about to be not just in the line of a king, but in the line of the Messiah. She didn't need to know any of that. She simply said, how do I faithfully serve today? And as an application point, that's something I take a lot of encouragement with. It can be very easy in all of our lives to feel downtrodden, to go, I don't know what the future holds. I don't know, is any of this ever going to be significant, helpful? Ruth stands as a reminder, not just to remain faithful, to act faithfully, even amidst dark times, but to go, you know what? I maybe can't see all the things God can and will use out of my service, but I know he can do some amazing things. And so I am called to act faithfully, not knowing where the future holds. And I might be surprised at how God can use me to further his kingdom. So her faithfulness, I want us to really get and take some encouragement from. That's my application point anyway. Tim, as you look over at this book, as we kind of close out here, what's an application point you want to leave for our listeners?
Yeah, I've got two, Brian. The first is, when we read the book of Ruth, there's struggles, there's turmoil. I think you are so right in seeing the faithfulness of Ruth as so vitally important. As we think about that faithfulness, we also see the importance of prayer in the midst of those dark moments. You know, I love this idea that the first thing that Naomi says is, may the Lord bless you and may you find rest in the house of a new husband. That prayer that she really utters in desperation with no real evidence that she necessarily thought it would happen. That becomes the catalyst for the entire story. So even when we're desperate, we can still pray and God will listen to our prayers. And as I mentioned before, I think prayer is a crucial narrative instrument in the book of Ruth. And it's a reminder for me, hey, when I feel broken, when I feel like I can't see, it's important to pray and to place it into God's hands and to trust in him, as you mentioned. And then the second thing I'll say is this. When we think of Boaz in the book of Ruth, Boaz is an incredible model, especially when it comes to him paying attention to those who have no ability or promise of paying him back or rewarding him. And you mentioned that in one of our episodes, Brian, but when we think of our lives, it is so easy, as Jesus said, to love those who love us, to pray for those who pray for us, to serve those who serve us. But that is not true Christ-likeness. Christ-likeness is when we love those who have no real possibility or promise of rewarding us in return. And yet Boaz had truly a godly concern for Naomi and Ruth. And at least for me, that reminds me, whatever privileges God has given me, whatever advantages, whatever opportunities, I don't want to take those for granted. I want to have my eyes open to see as God sees and to bless others without any expectation of return. And this is what I love. Boaz, had he not done what he did, he would have been still a virtuous man, a righteous man, but God honored him because he took the time to see the poor, to see the destitute, and to help them. And I think again of what it says in James, pure and undefiled religion is this, helping orphans and widows in their time of distress and keeping oneself undefiled by the world. We see that in Boaz, and what a powerful reminder to have eyes to see those that often are overlooked. So that's my takeaway. And Dr. Brian, as we finish this up, do you have any final words before we let our listeners know where we're going in the season ahead?
Well, just we are going to be coming back to Ruth one further time a little bit later this summer. We've got a interview we're still working on with a scholar of Ruth who's recently published a commentary on them. So stay tuned for more information. So we're not quite done with Ruth, but yeah, let's go ahead and talk about where we are going next.
Yes. So next up on our agenda, we are going to be turning to the Minor Prophets and the book of Habakkuk. And listeners, just to whet your appetite, this is Brian's sandbox. If it's not too sacrilegious to say that. No one necessarily enjoys Habakkuk. That's kind of the point of the book. But when we think of it, this is something that Brian has spent a lot of time studying himself personally, especially over the last few years. And so we're going to be going through the book of Habakkuk again, verse by verse, trying to offer some insights. And I know you're going to appreciate, especially Dr. Brian, as he's going to take the lead in plowing us through. And truly, we are looking forward to that. So listeners, we are so excited. This is a privilege for us. And as we come to the end of Ruth, we just pray God's blessing over you, over your life, over your family. And I pray truly that God would bless you in every way as you continue to study his word. So we'll see you soon. It won't be for a few weeks. We're going to be launching that series on Habakkuk on May the 13th. So we're going to take a couple of weeks off in order to allow us to prepare and get ready for that. But on May 13th, you can expect the first edition of the new season as we go through the book of Habakkuk. So God bless you. And as always, stay cool and stay old.